The economy performed pretty well last year, and most forecasts say that 2018 should be decent as well. But we've already seen a brutal return of stock market volatility, growing fears of what interest rates and inflation might do, and concerns over a variety of political issues at home and abroad. Today, Nationwide's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist David Burson is in to help us sort through what might be waiting for us around the corner. The economy is our topic today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Today, we welcome back Dr. David Burson, Nationwide's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist. And if I've not lost count, this is the sixth year in a row where David's joining us to practice both the art and science of economic forecasting. David, welcome back to the show.
Joe, if I finally get it right, will you stop asking me?
I absolutely will not. We love having you in. Now, here I'm going to throw you a curveball right off the bat. Economic forecasting, is it an art or a science?
Yes.
That's what I thought you might say. Explain a little bit about how you do your job. How's an economist work?
Well, the most important thing is good data. And we rely on data from the state of Ohio, from the federal government, from other governments. If you can't trust the data, if the data aren't good, then you can't possibly know what's really going on. So it all starts with data. And we put the data into statistical models. We're very good at explaining the past. And as long as the past replicates in the future, we're pretty good at forecasting the future. So our models look at what's happened in the past. Again, we can do that pretty well. And then we look at the present and say, all right, what part of the past does this most closely look like? And, you know, if it looks like A, then we say, well, A is probably going to happen.
And I notice most economists, or at least the ones I consider to be reliable, are not short in reminding us that we don't know everything, that forecasts usually come with qualifiers.
Well, we don't know lots of things. You know, will behavior change? You know, we look back at statistics and we create our models based on historical data. What happens if people behave differently today or tomorrow than the models that we use based on how they behaved yesterday will no longer be germane?
So let's go back to the past year. As you said, most economic forecasting starts with what happened in the past. This is the immediate past. I said at the top of the show that by most standards, 2017 was a pretty good year. Would you agree?
Well, 2017 was an okay year. Overall economic growth was up a little bit from the year before. But it depends on what your comparison is. If you look at the period since the Great Recession ended, 2017 was okay. You look at growth periods since the end of World War II, 2017 wasn't really all that good. Economic growth since the Great Recession ended has averaged about 2.1%. We were just a tad over that last year. But if you look at every year since the end of World War II, including the down years, so including the recessions, growth's averaged a little over 3%. So we were only, you know, a little bit, two-thirds of the way, you know, only not quite all the way to the 3%, 3.1%, that we've seen, including the down periods.
You mentioned that your gauge of the economy is somewhat personal. I mean, if I'm somebody who's looking to retire or investing for college, last year was a really good year if I had my money in equities. So besides GDP, inflation, interest rate moves, maybe some thoughts on how 2017 performed there.
Well, I think the most important thing, economists like to talk about GDP because it's a nice thumbnail of the whole economy. The most important thing is jobs, employment. Economists, every first Friday of the month, look at the employment numbers and the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the unemployment rate. Well, employment growth was pretty good last year. More people were put to work. More people are working in the U.S. today than at any time in our history. The unemployment rate fell. We ended the year with the unemployment rate at 4.1%. It's the lowest it's been in a long time. It's lower, not the lowest it's ever been, of course, but it's lower than the low points of lots of other expansions. This hasn't been a strong expansion, but it's been a long one. And so if we look at job creation, look at unemployment. Again, what I think are the most important things on a personal basis. Do you have a job? What's your income? Those were pretty good last year.
What about consumer confidence, which I think takes in some of those items you just mentioned, but there are official gauges of how consumers feel. What do those gauges look at, and what did they tell us last year?
Well, the surveys ask households, how do you feel? Do you have a job? Are you looking for a job? You think your income is going to go up? What do you think inflation is going to do? And they combine them into various statistics. So if you look at the overall consumer confidence or consumer sentiment indices, they've moved up. People are more confident. And I think it's really following what's happening in the job market. I don't think it causes the job market. Economists like to talk about causality. Does A cause B or does B cause A? Here's a case where I think it's the economy that is causing confidence. So as the economy has performed well, but particularly the job market's performed well, confidence has gone up. And as long as we continue to get decent job growth and wage gains, confidence is going to be high.
Who were some of the sector winners and losers last year? Our friends in farming will tell you, once again, it was not a great year.
No, clearly farm incomes were, again, not very good. But you could be in a worse sector. You could be in retail, where, you know, if you didn't work for one of the big online retailers, you probably had a pretty good chance of losing your job. Well, that's an overstatement. But job growth in retail was very weak last year in a growing economy where most other sectors did well. What did particularly well? Information services. We're moving ever more into information technology, computerization, and people with those skills never lack jobs.
We're chatting with Dr. David Burson, the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for our friends at Nationwide. David comes in at least once a year to help us kind of wrap our arms about what's going on in the economy around all of us. Anything significant, David, last year that carried through or transpired in Ohio that might have been any different than what we saw nationally? Any trends different or anything?
Well, Ohio, at least for the last 10 years, and really longer than that, to a large extent mirrors the national economy. Now, Ohio has a little bit larger manufacturing sector, and manufacturing employment gains last year, while were decent, were not as good as overall job growth. So if you look, for example, at job growth in Ohio, it wasn't quite the national average, but it was similar, and it's similar, becoming more similar over time as Ohio continues to diversify and increase employment in sectors outside of manufacturing. So we're going to look increasingly like the national average as time goes on, and we were really close to that last year.
Let's move on to some things that might be happening in 2018, and many of those are based, we're going to get out of some of the specific financial and economic areas and get into some policy issues. We've just wrapped up the first year of the presidency of Donald Trump. I think most people would say it's been interesting, might be a good way to describe it. But as you look at some of the policies that the president has promoted, some they followed through on already in Congress, give us your assessment of the economy under Donald Trump a year in.
Well, I think as with most presidents, the answer is it's mixed. It's never always good or always bad. The other thing, though, before I talk about some of the details, presidents are a lot like quarterbacks. And quarterbacks always get way too much credit when things go well and way too much blame when things go badly. You know, if I told you that Tom Brady would throw for 500 yards
and lose,
would you have said that, you know, Brady was at fault? Well, no. So what went well last year? I think tax reform was, on balance, a good thing. Was it perfect? No. I think that they could have done some things to have made it better, but it's better than the tax system we had. Most individuals will have more after-tax income this year. More importantly, I think, more businesses will have greater income, and hopefully they will use that to invest in more machines, in more people, in increasing their output. And I think that probably will be the case. The other thing I think that was pretty positive last year was on the regulatory front. We need regulations, but all regulations aren't perfect, and I think the administration did a pretty good job of taking the froth away from the regulatory environment. And those two things together, we think, will help boost the economy this year.
One more question about the tax cuts. So help me understand, there was a part of that that allows American companies who were keeping cash in foreign banks to repatriate those funds, to bring them back into the United States at a lower tax rate. Did I describe that right? And B, why is that good?
Well, you did describe it correctly. The tax system we had made profits earned by U.S. companies that had subsidiaries abroad, those tax rates were very high. It wasn't worth bringing the money back in here. So as a one-time thing, the U.S. government's telling these companies, you can bring those funds back in the U.S. one time only at a lower tax rate. Will that have any meaningful impact? Will there be some firms that bring their money back? But, you know, money's fungible. And if you've got, I don't know, $1 billion in Europe, you can probably use that as collateral to borrow money in the U.S. And interest rates are so low, it doesn't cost you very much anyway. So I think that's the one part of the tax changes that probably doesn't help very much. It's not negative, but it probably won't do much to help the economy.
Two other Trump policies, maybe if you'd comment on, that have a direct impact on our farmer members in Ohio Farm Bureau and all Ohioans and all Americans, trade and immigration. Thoughts on the president being, we stepped away from TPP. We're starting to renegotiate NAFTA. From an economist's perspective, what are you watching there?
Well, NAFTA is an old agreement, early 90s, probably does need to be renegotiated, looked at to be brought up to date to the way the economies in the three countries are today. Having said that, I think most economists, not all, but most economists would say NAFTA has been successful for all three countries, not just successful for Canada and Mexico, but also very successful for the U.S. Now, did some people lose their jobs because of NAFTA? Absolutely. And so NAFTA was not good for them. But for most people in the U.S. and for the country as a whole, NAFTA was unambiguously positive. And I think that stepping away from NAFTA, if we do, you know, they're still negotiating, we don't know what will happen. But if NAFTA is ended, I think that would be a negative for the U.S. economy and perhaps a big one.
Just some quick thoughts on immigration, and I'm going to oversimplify it, but making it harder for workers to enter the United States. Your thoughts?
There are two aspects to this. One is the legal, illegal question. And you know, we have laws, and laws should be followed. Having said that, if you look at the components of what determines long-term growth in the U.S., it's two things. It's productivity gains, and it's labor force growth. Unfortunately, the U.S. is getting older, and so labor force growth is slowing. So if you want growth to go back to the over 3% gains that we saw from World War II on, and not just the 2% that we've had since the end of the Great Recession. We don't want to settle for that. We need faster labor force growth. One of the ways you can do that is with better immigration.
So one of the other big moves that the president made was to decide that the current chairperson of the Federal Reserve Board would be stepping down, and he's appointed someone new. We're going to talk about that next with David Burson from Nationwide on Town Hall, Ohio. We have back in the studio with us Dr. David Burson. He works over at Nationwide. He's the Senior Vice President and their Chief Economist. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, you'll recognize that David's a regular guest who comes in semi-close to the start of the year. We're a little bit late this year, but to kind of help us look in the crystal ball as to what might be down the road. We were talking about the Trump administration earlier, David, and in particular some of his policies. One of the big things he did was decide that he wanted a new chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. First of all, just a quick 101 on the Fed. What is it and why is it important to us?
The Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States, and it conducts monetary policy. Basically, it determines how much liquidity there is in the economy and where interest rates go. As the Fed adds liquidity, interest rates tend to go down. The Fed takes liquidity out, interest rates tend to go up. And that affects business activity, affects consumer activity, affects the business cycle.
And I hear that the Fed has two primary responsibilities, stable prices and maximum employment. Do those always walk in lockstep? I'm not an economist, but it seems one might not always be conducive to the other.
Well, you're exactly right. In fact, those are congressionally mandated goals. So the Fed was put together by Congress, and Congress can change those mandates over time, as they have. The mandates the Fed has now from Congress are to have the most employment possible with stable prices. Do they always go together? Well, sometimes they do. Sometimes you get good job growth and inflation going down. We had that, for example, in much of the second half of the 1990s. We've had that in recent years as well, and that's a positive. But sometimes they go in other directions. Ultimately, economists think that if you bring unemployment down too much, you will generate inflation. And in that sense, they will go in different directions. And then what do? Which one of those two mandates, which you have to meet, but they conflict, which one do you then try to meet?
So it's one of the big jobs of the president to appoint the chairman. Does he appoint them or nominate them?
He nominates them, and the Senate has to confirm.
So he apparently, for whatever reason, decided that Janet Yellen, who's been in the job for several years, wasn't going to be the person he wanted in that job. So I'm not going to ask you to speculate on why the president did that, but your assessment of Chairman Yellen and the job that she did.
I think that Chair Yellen did a pretty good job as chairman of the Fed. You know, if you add economists, their opinions go up exponentially. did the Fed do a perfect job? No. And I think Janet would probably be the first to say no. You know, our crystal ball isn't perfect either. So, you know, there were things that we might have done differently. But by and large, the Fed did a pretty good job under Janet Yellen, helping to move the economy farther away from the Great Recession.
So the new guy is Jerome Powell. What do we know about him?
Well, Jay Powell has been at the Fed, and not an economist, he's a lawyer, but you know, in a role as one of the governors of the Fed, has worked with Janet Yellen for a number of years. What we know about him is what he said in public, and it doesn't sound as if, at least initially, the policies that Chair Powell will bring will be meaningfully different than if Chair Yellen had stayed.
So with that in mind, what kinds of things that Mr. Powell and the Fed could do in coming months that would either reassure you or make you a little bit nervous?
Well, one of the things the Fed said it wants to do, and I think that under Powell they will continue to do, is to normalize interest rates. What does that mean? Well, interest rates have been abnormally low for many years, even after the Great Recession ended, as the Fed tried to make sure that we didn't have deflation, prices going down generally in the economy, and to make sure that we wouldn't fall back into recession. I think they're pretty convinced now that deflation is no longer a problem and that the economy will grow in a self-sustaining way. So the Fed wants to bring interest rates back closer to where historically they've been. Well, if they're below that, that means they have to raise them. So the Fed has promised us, subject to how the economy actually performs, that it will be raising interest rates over the next several years. And I take them at their word. I think we will see interest rates move up and maybe even more than financial markets think.
So if the promise is normalization, is there a number? What's normal?
No, there's no normal. There's averages, but what's average may be appropriate for a particular economic circumstance that's not appropriate in another one. The Fed does give us forecasts. All the voting members and the non-voting members, the Federal Open Market Committee, that's the group of regional Federal Reserve Bank presidents, plus the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, who make monetary policy. Once a quarter, they tell us what their forecasts for interest rates are. Now, they don't identify them. We don't know, for example, which forecast was Janet Yellen's, or nor do we know now which one is Jay Powell's. But we get to look at all their forecasts, and the market looks at sort of the median, the central point of those forecasts, and says, well, this is the most likely path for the Fed to follow. And if you look at that, the Fed is saying that they're going to tighten 3 to 4 times this year, 25 basis points a time. So at the end of the year, the federal funds rate, the very short-term rate that the Fed controls and uses to influence all the other interest rates in the economy, will be about a full percentage point higher than we started the year.
And where did we start the year?
We started at 1.25%. So we'll probably end the year at 2 to 2.25%.
We're going to talk about some of the outlook for 2018, what might happen with GDP, interest rates, inflation, jobs and employment, and those types of things, as we continue our visit with Dr. David Burson, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist of Nationwide. By the way, if you want to pick up this show again and go back and listen to it, they'll be available on the website of townhallohio.org. More right after this.
Things are getting easier. I don't have to try so hard. I think I finally figured out the way I'm gonna make my start. Things are getting easier. Things are getting easier. Things are getting easier.
So, David, I'd ask you, will things be easier in 18? I already know your answer. It would be, that depends. David Burson is our guest. He's the chief economist for Nationwide and back to help us look ahead. And I said almost a half hour ago we were going to do some forecasting on 2018. We're at that point. Your general overview of what to expect in the coming year in terms of what the economy might be doing.
Well, Joe, that depends.
Of course it does.
But our best guess is that 2018 will be the best year for economic growth since the Great Recession ended. Maybe 3% growth this year for the first time since the early to mid-2000s, helped by the tax cuts, helped by deregulation, and still, even though the Fed is going to be raising rates, interest rates that are pretty low. So 3% is not bad. We'll bring more people into the workforce. We'll have more jobs. We'll bring the unemployment rate down to levels that we rarely see, even in economic expansions. We'll also, unfortunately, probably see an uptick in inflation. We're already starting to see that to some extent. Now, we're not looking for inflation to skyrocket. This is not 1974, 1979 over again. But we've seen inflation at 1% to 2% for the last decade. We may see it move a little bit above 2% this year. So that's a little bit more inflation.
So I know one of the numbers that gets utilized that I look at in terms of GDP, and as you said, job growth being one of the major components of that, is the jobs creation report. Do you have a number that you're looking at in terms of, so I'm sitting here and I remember what David Burson told me to see what jobs do. Do you have a number that you can use that was good or worrisome?
No, I think on the jobs front, it's all going to be good. And I think that by the end of 2018, non-farm payroll employment, which is the measure that we all use to see what the net number of new jobs that were created. We will have created more than 2 million jobs this year in the country as a whole. And that's net jobs. It's after some people have been laid off or quit or just retired. We still will have created more than 2 million this year.
That sounds like an awful lot.
It is a lot, but we've created more than 2 million for the last several years. In fact, I think it will slow down a little bit this year, simply because we're starting to run out of workers. Go back to the immigration question again. We need more workers because we are going to start to run out, and that's going to put upward pressure on prices.
You said something that I've never thought to ask anyone, and you happen to be sitting in front of me. We quote those employment stats as non-farm jobs. What's the background on that?
A large part of that is that farm employment is such a small part of the economy these days. And it also tends to be highly seasonal. And yes, we can seasonally adjust the numbers, but think back 100 years, think back 150 years, when the bulk of everybody in the United States worked on farms, working the soil. Today, just a small fraction of people do that. Now, they produce way more food than at any time ever in history. So farm productivity is just through the roof and has been and will continue to go up. I mean, it's a good thing. We pay less for our food here in the U.S. than anybody does. because farmers in the U.S. are so productive. But there are hardly any farmers anymore.
So here's a qualifier. David and I sat down to tape this on Valentine's Day this past Wednesday. So who knows what's going to happen through the rest of today, let alone Thursday or Friday. But we have seen a return of pretty significant, well, I consider it significant volatility because we haven't had any in the stock markets. And they're all saying, all of the analysts say that it's because of the fear that interest rates will go up and that will make it tougher on business and that inflation is going up. So could you kind of give us your take on that last day of January, early into February, and we saw, you know, 1,000-point swings a couple of different times during both days?
The right answer is nobody knows on any particular day why the stock market did what it did. They can point to things, and people pointed to the payroll employment numbers on the first Friday in February, which I think was February 2nd, so a couple of weeks ago now. And there was a jump in wage growth there, and perhaps the market got scared and said, oh, inflation's coming back. But, you know, the increases we've seen in the stock market over the last year, and particularly in December and January, were simply unsustainable. You know, we'd all like to see the stock market go up, you know, 1% per day forever.
I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely. But then who could afford to buy any stock? Back when I was in the housing and mortgage industry, when house prices were going up at 10, 15% per year, you had a house that was great. But at some point, nobody can afford to buy a house. Sustainable growth in the stock market is not double digits. It's not 20, 25% per year. It's 7, 8, maybe 9% per year. And we were seeing gains well above that. So it couldn't persist. And so some of that froth was eliminated with those 1,000-point declines. But if the economy continues to grow, if corporate profits go up, and as long as interest rates don't skyrocket, and I don't think anybody thinks they're going to skyrocket, then while we may not see 20% gains in the stock market, we should see some gains.
We'll be back to talk further with Dr. David Burson, and I'm going to pin him down a little bit on his interest rate forecast for 2018 when we continue on Town Hall, Ohio.
Well, I need dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need dollar, dollar, dollar.
If you need that dollar and you're going to borrow it, how much will that cost you? That's my next question for David Burson, the chief economist at Nationwide and our regular guest here on Town Hall, Ohio. So you said interest rates in 18 probably up, but not crazy up. Give us an idea of if I want to take out a home mortgage or buy a car, if I want to put some money into a CD or a money market account, what kind of numbers are we thinking here?
Well, if you look at mortgage rates, the most common type of mortgage is a 30-year fixed rate loan. And the rate you get depends in part on your credit, you know, how well you've done in the past with that. But let's say you're a pretty good credit. Right now, across the country, national average, 30-year fixed rate mortgage, about 4.25%. A year ago, it would have been 3.5%. So those rates have come up. But 3.5% are the lowest rates we would have seen since before World War II. So those were unusually low. Even 4.25% is pretty low. When I was a young boy in Youngstown, my parents had a house there, and our mortgage rate then was about where it is now. And this was in the early 60s. And then when my wife and I bought our first house at school up north, our mortgage rate was 7.5%, and we were incensed because we knew our parents had mortgage rates in the low fours. So while rates have gone up, they're still incredibly low. Where will they be at the end of the year? Well, we think if the economy continues to grow as we think it will, faster than it has, inflation moves up a little bit, the Fed tightens modestly, that those mortgage rates at the end of the year will be around 5%. Now, that's still historically a very low rate, but it's clearly higher than it is now and much higher than it was a year ago.
How about if I got scared when the market went through its swings and I threw all my money into a cash account and I'm thinking, you know, I need the safety. I'm going to buy myself a CD or two this year. What are we looking at there?
Short-term rates, I think, will move up more than long-term rates. So if that mortgage rate moves up 3/4 of a percentage point, I think the short rates, you know, what you might get, for example, in a checking account, will go up about that, maybe even a little bit more. It's still going to be pretty low. Short rates are lower than long rates, and they're lower than long rates for a very good reason. You know, when you buy a CD or you buy a treasury note, you're giving somebody your money. And you want, when you get it back in 10 years or 1 month, you want to get it back in purchasing power terms that are that are better than they are today. You know, if inflation goes up and you know, what you could have bought for $10 today is only worth $5 in the future, that's not very good. Well, we're pretty confident about where things will be in a month. 10 years from now, there's a lot more uncertainty. And that's the big reason why long-term interest rates are always, not always, but usually higher than short-term rates.
Back, your thoughts on inflation for 18. We've been under 2% for a number of years now. What's the estimate for the coming year?
I think we'll move a little bit above 2, but probably not much above 2. Now, in part, it depends on what happens with oil prices. OPEC has been reasonably successful at holding down production. Now, the good news is that means domestic production from shale is going up again. That'll be very good, for example, for southeastern Ohio. So we're seeing more production there. But it probably means that oil prices are going to be somewhere stuck between about $50 and $65 per barrel for a while. And that's maybe a little lower on average than we've seen. But core inflation, the things that most people buy all the time, we think we'll move up as the economy continues to grow. Markets get tighter. And if you sell something and more people want it, well, you can raise your price. And if everybody's raising their price, then that price gain will stick.
So I think I'm like the average consumer of financial information and news, David. I'll go online and whatever happened in the market or in the economy that day, I'll find as many stories saying this is great as I'll find stories saying it's Armageddon. I do rely on a piece that as a Nationwide customer myself, I get. It's your monthly economic and financial markets review. This is a pretty handy tool. What goes into preparing this? What are you trying to tell customers with this tool?
Well, while that goes out to customers, it is done primarily for our board of directors. So our board sees that several days before everybody else. And it's a way for our board, and then anybody else who wants to read it, the people who run the businesses at Nationwide, for example, plus all of our members, to know what the chief economist is thinking about the economy, about financial markets, about inflation, not only what's happening now, but where we think those things are going to go in the future.
I will tell you, it's for a novice such as myself, it's highly understandable and very useful. And if you would like to explore working with Nationwide and getting a lot of good services, including access to this pretty handy-dandy report, nationwide.com would be a real good starting point for you. We will be back to wrap up our conversation with the guy that is the author of the Economic and Financial Markets Monthly Review, David Burson, Nationwide's chief economist. We'll be back right after this. Dr. David Burson's been giving us some predictions, or at least insight maybe is a better word, into what we might expect out of the economy in 2018. David, thank you for that, and I think it's very useful information. Let's talk longer term, big picture, as people are wont to say, the 30,000-foot outlook. There's a lot of things going on in the world that probably as an economist either gives you a reason to get a good night's sleep or stay awake worrying. Population among them. Explosive population growth worldwide and aging population here in the United States. As you prepare yourself to advise the board of directors at Nationwide and your members who are with Nationwide, what are you taking into consideration there?
The biggest worries that I have, and I talk to the board about this, are long-term things. One is that as a country, we don't save enough. Now, that's personal savings, it's business savings, it's government savings. And because we don't save enough, we have to import capital from abroad. People in other countries who save more than we do put their money here. Now, that helps hold interest rates down. It helps boost the stock market. But it also means that the profits a greater share of the profits from American companies go overseas. They don't stay here in America. We need to save more. I'm not quite sure how we get people to do that. The other big thing that I'm concerned about is population growth, not just in the U.S., but in the other countries of the industrialized world. In fact, we're better off in terms of our demographics than most of them. You know, if you look at Europe, if you look at China, Japan, Russia, they're in terrible shape in terms of their demographics. We're only in bad shape. We don't have enough young households. We need more young households. And the biggest way to see that is there are a lot of people in my generation, the baby boomers, who have already retired, will be retiring in the next 15 years. We will be taking increasing amounts of Social Security and Medicare. Well, that's a pay-as-you-go system. Who's going to be there to pay as we go?
You mentioned Medicare, but for those of us who are baby boomers and the young people coming up behind us, health care in general, does that worry you, the fact that the costs and that piece of our economy and our lives just seems to be growing exponentially?
Well, there are two things going on there. One is there's more intensive use, and there will be as baby boomers get older, because the older you are, the more health care you use. And basically, we ain't seen nothing yet in terms of that intensity of use.
Yeah, there's a reason why every hospital in Columbus and across America has doubled and tripled in size.
That's right. But the other thing is, even if we didn't use it more intensively, the cost of healthcare keeps going up. And there are a number of reasons for that. But one of them is that we, as a country, are able to come up with new treatments. Now, that's a good thing. People can live longer. People can live healthier, longer lives. But it also tends to be more expensive.
Income inequality. We hear a lot about that now. Your thoughts on that as an economist?
Most of the stories about income inequality, while having a kernel of truth, probably overstate that to some extent. But there has been an increase in inequality. What's important, though, I think, more important than inequality, is what's actually happening to the growth of incomes in the middle and the bottom. I'm willing to have a little bit more inequality if people on the bottom half, the income distribution, are seeing their incomes grow at a pretty good rate. I think that's a worthwhile trade-off. It is not a worthwhile trade-off to have less inequality if it means everybody's incomes grow more slowly.
So one of the things that agriculture talks about, and a lot of businesses, so I'm sure you pay attention to, is the forecast that the climate is changing. Without getting into what the cause is or any of that, does that give you pause when you're thinking about the future of, well, certainly for Nationwide down the road?
Well, you know, Nationwide is in the business of looking long term, and we make financial promises that go out 50, perhaps 100 years, perhaps even more. Our economic forecasts don't go out nearly that far. Nobody could possibly predict what's going to happen to the economy in 50 or 100 years. We only look out 5, maybe 6 years at the longest. Occasionally, somebody will ask us for 10 years. And the good news is that while there may be climate change, it occurs relatively slowly and probably doesn't impact in the 3 to 5 years that we look at most closely for our forecast. It won't impact things to change them. But if you look out farther, so if we were to do forecasts out 50 years, then climate change, I think, could have an important impact.
Well, we'll have you back to talk a little bit more about that because we've run out of time. As always, a fascinating conversation with Dr. David Burson, Nationwide Senior Vice President and Chief Economist, with us on Town Hall, Ohio.
Town Hall, Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.